Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And along those lines, there's a huge conference happening this weekend in Sedona, Arizona, which is a tribute to this evolution of consciousness, to this immortal essence of consciousness. And that's why I've gathered a lot of people in Sedona who have many different ways of approaching this human essence. And I'm very happy to be here right now in Arizona with one of the keynote speakers, Max Christensen. Thanks, Max.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, well, I'm happy because I've heard a lot about you. I've heard, in a sense, you're a legend, sort of. But you're also very humble. I'm just surprised. You know, here I am. People have told me about you, and now we're meeting. But so I want to say, you know, you've pulled together many different traditions from around the world. Can you trace back? I mean, starting. Like how this journey began for you?
Well, I was very ill.
Oh.
You know, I had very bad health, like my brothers too. And my two brothers had died of sickness.
Really?
And so what happened is that as time went by, my father being in the military, I had a caretaker who happens to have been a Taoist. And so he taught me the ways of healing myself through Qigong, Chinese martial arts, meditation when I was 6 years old.
Where were you living?
Michigan at the time. It was Columbus, Georgia, where we actually met him.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then his roots go back to Hebei, China.
Mm.
You know, and he went to Hong Kong. So, you know, his family traveled everywhere. And, he was a teacher. He was a monk. And so at that time in 1960, it was 66, that was very unknown in the West. And so, you know, during the times I was with him, you know, he taught me how to get well. And then eventually... I had an accident in Upper Michigan, and it was in Grayling, and it was on Lake Marguerite, and where I had, when I was a kid, you know, when you're a kid, you always have a wild imagination.
Uh-huh.
So when I was around between 8 and 9 years old, I was playing during a thunderstorm with the practice my teacher taught me called thunder breathing.
Uh-huh.
And inadvertently, I was holding a fishing pole, and it makes you very conductive. And I was, you know, on a lake, and I was on a rock, and I was in a kind of high place. And put a long story short, I got whacked by the lightning.
You were doing thunder breathing during a thunderstorm on a high rock, and you got struck by lightning.
Yeah. And my teacher said I was picked by the, you know, the spirit world for a path. And
were you knocked out though?
I was. My teacher found me. I was waving the pole. You know, I got knocked back in slow motion, and he felt something was wrong. And it took me about 2 weeks to recover.
Wow!
And after that, everything started opening up. You know, that we call the sky eye opened up, and it kept open for about 30 years.
Wow!
So I had to adjust to seeing two different worlds at one time.
So you were fundamentally changed after that.
Yeah.
So in a sense. It was, in a way, meant to be. I mean, it was an initiation.
Right, right, right. You know, and then later on through life, I met other Taoists. And then Kahuna, I studied under my uncle, who was a Kahuna in Hawaii, on Kauai, and the Pelikun Kanalu tradition. And he, Tutu, it means auntie, you know, she had a long beard, and she didn't cast a shadow, and she had green eyes. And
the woman had a long beard, and she was a kahuna?
Yeah, green eyes and red hair. Now, you know, Hawaiians are descended from people from India, dark skin and that, but she was touched, you know, by the spirit world.
Right.
And so while I was there for about 29 years in Hawaii, I got to study under the kahuna tradition.
Wait, explain that again, because you're saying she had green eyes, red hair, and didn't cast a shadow.
Yeah. In the kahuna in Hawaii, when they have what's called mana mana, that means that they're like their light body, you know, they don't cast a shadow. Give an example, you know, Tutu, when she had passed on, you know, a long time ago, one day after my class, I was going down to the mall to drink my coffee after class, and I was walking up this hill. I see an old Hawaiian lady, and she's pushing a cart with nothing in it. And I kind of walked past her, and she's 5 foot tall, kind of heavy. And I said, boy, some crazy lady pushing an empty cart up. And next thing she goes, hey, boy, where's my Camel cigarettes?
Uh-huh.
And Tutu, I always have to offer her Camel cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
And when she comes in the house, the smoke would flow down. I turned around, it was Tutu Rachel.
The woman who died many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah.
And, you know, she was actually I learned from her grandson. Uh-huh. But Tutu said, well, you know, you made a mistake before, so you had to come back and finish the training. So my Hawaiian name was Pu'oi Pumihana. Mm. And Pu'oi means the chosen. And that was given by, the name was given to their family by King Kamehameha I.
Wow, the real king of Hawaii. Yeah, but what was the tradition or the practice to create such, you know,
well,
an energy?
In every school that I've trained and belonged to, from, you know, the Tibetan, the Nyingma tradition, you know, they have a practice called the Santik Purba, the Kilikalea practice. The Taoists have the gold dragon, the gold flower, the reversing of the water wheel. All these secret practices are meant to convert mass into energy. Mm-hmm. You know, like the returnable rainbow body of Tibet, there's the returnable and non-returnable, mm-hmm. based on your developmental skill. And even in the Taoist tradition, in the Kunlun Mountains, there's a secret called the Red Phoenix Body, mm-hmm. where you open up the nine sections of the brain called the nine palaces. And what happens is that, like the last master who attained it, he took his students to what we call Yongcha, you know, Chinese breakfast. And he gave the student the manual, and he did the practice as a flash of red light and red smoke, and he was gone.
He disappeared?
Yeah.
And did he return?
No, he was finished with this path. And they call that to open the doors and open the windows.
Do you know how to do that?
I know the training for it. I do go dragon practices from Maoshan and Kunlun. You know, mainly it's the arts I teach are from Maoshan.
But if we don't mind, go back to Hawaii. So right. you had your Chinese master when you were young and you were struck by lightning.
Yeah, I had many Chinese masters. Yes.
But then you went to Hawaii and met these masters, these kahuna masters.
Yeah, the kahuna.
And did they teach you the kahuna tradition?
They had the kahuna when they developed that power. Mm-hmm. They have a practice called Pico Pico. And it's a breathing practice, somewhat like a dolphin, you know. But I'm not allowed by tradition not to say, you know, the exact method on
right.
that. And then there's called the breath of Kihei Mo'o. Mo'o means dragon. And you ever see the Maoris when they meet you in New Zealand? They hey yes hey, and they stick their tongue out and they wave their spear at you. And they
I never saw it.
Yeah, the Maori. It's an offering that they'll look like fierce warriors. They'll slap their body and uh-huh. they'll sing the song. In Lua, the Hawaiian art of bone breaking, they'll do that. And so when they greet a guest, you know, before they give you this ava to drink, they'll make this dragon breathing. And they'll make their eyes looking fierce. And that's how they welcome you.
Wow.
And they transfer what's called the ha, the breath of life.
Uh-huh.
Like Tutu, if you had a broken arm, she could blow on it and fix it right away.
Really?
And the mana mana, they could take what's called kavila stick. It's a ironwood.
Huh.
And it's a piece of wood made in a little stick, and they throw it at the enemy of another tribe, and the person would pick it up and get an electrical shock and go unconscious from it.
Wow.
That's the power of this breath.
How do they gain this power?
We call it the Pico Pico breathing and breath of the Mo'o.
But this is a practice you have to do.
Yeah,
you just don't do it once. And
No, it's a practice. You know, the royalty, even the Kamehamehas, they had to learn to protect themselves from the kahuna, because there's 33 different clans of kahuna. So they had to protect themselves from, example, bad kahunas would do what's called ana ana, mm-hmm. means the death chant. And so they had to learn how to turn it back.
And they did that.
Yeah, that's why even the royalty had to learn to protect themselves.
So that was one phase, the early China, then mm-hmm. the kahuna, and then from there...
Later on I learned under Maoshan masters.
Maoshan is Chinese Taoist.
Yeah, from the southern China.
You go to China for this?
No, my uncle lives in Hawaii, yeah. and I trained with him for over 20-something years. Mm-hmm. And then I had I learned though, so I was with the Red Willow Society in Taos, New Mexico. I was with the Navajo and Apache medicine.
So you learned Navajo and Apache, but their tradition is.
Oh no, they said they have a form of light body.
Oh, they do.
You know, like they call it the spirit walkers, the skinwalkers. Well, there's many variations of that based on the tradition, uh-huh. and the Indians are very secretive about this. But they have a specific breathing they do. And you notice that they always would cover their eyes in sunglasses, even in the dark times, the old uh-huh. medicine men, because the light from their vision is so bright. The Taoists uh-huh. call yin-yang eye. So they can see the spirit world and the physical world at the same time.
So the light that's emitted from their eyes.
They get so hypersensitive.
Uh-huh.
But there's, one of the secrets they do is, you notice the Native Americans, they're always quiet.
Yeah.
They always use the maximum. They think every word, so each word has power. 98% of our energy is wasted through speaking.
Yeah.
And if we didn't speak, 98% of your energy would be regenerated. Mm-hmm. That's why monks don't speak in temples. That's why we need quiet places. Like if I didn't speak, I probably would, be
I'm
at a,
sorry, I didn't mean to interfere with your
answer. No, be at a very specific, I'd be at a much different place.
But your job is also to be a teacher.
Yeah, I made the promise to pass on the knowledge to my teachers, because in China, it's forbidden, unless you're in a certain family, you have a certain name. And it's, if you learn from the ancient Chinese, forget it, for a Westerner, because once they don't trust you. And then there's all these layers.
But it's forbidden for what?
To learn the secrets.
Oh.
Because they think you're used against them in the higher levels. Like say you got to be an outer student first.
Uh-huh.
Then you got to be an inner student. Then you have to be a hallway student. Then an indoor student. Then a closed door student.
And then the inner circle.
And then you have to be in the inner
circle. When you made it to the inner circle.
Yeah. My uncle gave me the name Qing Feng Dao Shi, which means Taoist teacher, pure wind.
Uh-huh.
Marrero Montarami, which is my name from the Ainu tradition, the shaman tradition, means the origin of wind.
Ah, so you have a whole wind in your energy field.
Yeah, all my names are based on wind.
So you were given access to all these deep traditions, and what they have in common
the
is...
The root
of all these. But they all have in common the building the light body.
But there's different stages of it. There's some where you get the light body at the moment of death. And there's some that you get before death.
Wasn't that more ideal?
Yeah, well, see, there's three times of awakening. You can get before death, during, or after. After, you can't really, because you need a physical body because it's part of your original mind. So without that, you have to come back. So 49 days, you make, you die, you come back and do it again. Your choice.
Isn't that what Jesus did, though?
Yeah. And, then during, you're kind of busy, so do it before.
Right.
Example, Jesus, he's very popular. But he wasn't the only one. See,
no.
He was the famous one because the blue and white robes he wore were actually Nyingma. He's actually learned in Tibet also. That's where he learned all the skills that he had, the spiritual skills. Like in the Gurdjieff school, I have a student who is from the Gurdjieff school. And like a lot of the siddhas, a lot of the powers of, converting mass into energy and creating things is in that school also.
And the Siddha Yogas of South India,
right.
Thermalinga,
the Nath Yogis.
Yeah.
Now, they're the alchemists, but... You see, with these people, though, you have to understand that there's an inner alchemy we call Nadan, and that's where you use the glands of the body and the energy that's hidden within the vacuum. There's actually zero-point energy in three places in the body.
Mm.
In the head, they call it the secret square inch. If it's in the school of Tet, the school of Anubis, it's the secret red square, representing in the Great Pyramid.
Is that the pituitary pineal?
Yeah.
That's the third eye?
Yeah. We call it, yeah. Sky,
yeah.
There's many eyes. There's 99 levels of seeing, not just looking at aura.
Uh-huh.
There's sky eye, Buddha eye, all seeing eye, based on the tradition.
Because in this Qigong that I do, we call it the Tian...
Tian Qi.
Yeah.
Yeah, sky energy.
You know Yan Chen? I do his practice sometimes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so yes, there's all...
But remember, a lot of those are fire-based practices and not water-based. And so once you learn the inner alchemy, then you have to mix it with the outer alchemy. And that's what they call the dragon, the wish-fulfilling gem, the radiant Ben stone, and other traditions, the tear of Ra.
What is that?
Alchemy stone, the philosopher's stone.
It's an actual stone, actual substance? It's an actual elixir? Is that what you're wearing?
Yeah.
Are you going to give us a sample?
And what it is, but what it does, it can eat its own weight in gold. And what it does, the alchemist, I know, so I have some friends who are Nath yogis from southern India. And like the Taoists, see, when they learn alchemy, how they learn it is Lao Tzu bought it from India to China.
Uh-huh.
And he taught his students Changsi and Wei Tzu.
Oh, Lao Tzu was an Indian yogi.
No, he bought the knowledge.
Oh.
And so he didn't completely teach the whole teachings of the alchemy.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why a lot of alchemists thought, using cinnabar and lead and jade, you create the dragon's elixir.
But they also poison themselves.
And they died, But you can make it with the pineal pituitary.
Uh-huh.
Because when you do the practice of Red Phoenix, you get what's called, those chemicals shut off and you create DMT in your brain.
Right.
Naturally.
Yeah, instead of having to take it through ridiculous ceremonies.
And so the secret of alchemy goes back from southern India 55,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, the yogis in India, they'll take this and they'll live off this.
But what is it that actually you're showing?
This is solidified mercury.
Oh, is that a solid piece?
Yeah, it's solidified mercury that's been solidified at room temperature. Now, in the West, you say that's impossible. But there's a difference between chemistry and alchemy.
Right.
And so the bear who wears it, this feeds the gold dragon body.
That just wearing that? Yeah. Did you create that piece?
No, I know people who make it special for me.
Oh, okay.
And what happens is that you have to feed it gold, and you must feed the dragon. The dragon body must be fed.
What do you feed that? What
gold?
You, gold. What in what form?
What do you got? Films of gold.
How do you feed
the little gold paper?
Yeah, gold papers.
How do you actually feed it?
Well, it'll absorb any type of gold you put on it.
You put gold on that mercury. It looks like a lingam.
It represents the shape of the universe in the Indian tradition.
Ah.
But, you know, the Taoists, again, they lost it. So I go to, you know, other traditions, mm-hmm. and I find the secret. Mm-hmm. And so they can say in the old one yogis, they could dump it in the water and they can live off that. The Taoists say to eat the morning dew with the mm-hmm. eyes and to drink the morning dew with the waters.
That's what the alchemists say, yeah. The Western alchemists.
Well, you drink the water from here, but then you got to look at it, the rays of the light off the mercury.
But what water? It looks like a solid metal.
It is solid.
So what?
Look, here.
Okay.
Show you something.
Max is just going to show me something. He's okay. He's very interesting here. Place here for those.
This is solidified mercury.
This is solidified. I'm holding a little silver.
Solidified mercury.
Of solidified. Very slippery.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can put that in water. See, and the jade elixir is the Taoist would drink
that
the mercury water.
So you put this little piece of solidified mercury in a regular bottle of water and you drink that.
Yeah, but it has to be absorbed. It has to be exposed to the sun and the moon.
Ah.
It has to be done a certain way and you have to do a certain practice.
Oh, a certain kind of Qigong type practice?
Well, Neigong.
Neigong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So, and then you drink that every day.
You don't have to, but the old Taoists used to do this, and there's three stones. This is the white stone.
Uh-huh. This is real alchemy.
And the real white stone is, it was after 49 days, or 90 days based on the tradition, is that you'll get rid of the sicknesses in the body, right? Mm. Or prevent it if you actually took it all the time. Then it was conformed into red mercury where you ate the size of a grain of rice, and uh-huh. that kept you alive.
That's they call that the red lion,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. But then again, the poisonous arsenic and the lead is neutralized. It's the elixir of immortality.
It is. Huh.
And so then later on, they'd change it again into the philosopher's stone that changes base metals into gold. But it wasn't really gold. It's alchemical gold. And after 100 years, that gold that you made would revert back to its base metal.
Well, do you teach this? Or you
No, I know only very little bit on this.
You know, no more than most people.
But a lot of people in the West don't believe in these things anymore.
Well, it doesn't matter if they believe in it. It's real. I mean, but what the purpose of – this is your sort of –
Well, you've got the internal and the outer alchemy. So you can do either or to get that gold dragon body.
Yeah.
But we use this because you need to feed the dragon body. Like people think like gazing at the sun is going to give you awakening. Well, it triggers you in certain ways, but – if done incorrectly, it can be damaging. But right. you can't just look at the sun and get it. You have to do the other internal practices. You know, that means your nervous system has to be open.
Right. So you have to start there. So ultimately, these practices create the rainbow body.
Dragon body. But there are two bodies. Before gold dragon body occurs, you have the blue dragon body. This was taken in Tibet of me.
I see.
That's me there when I was getting
that's
changed.
You. Well, I hope you're going to show this at the conference. No. Okay. I think that's
but,
amazing.
But there's some horns here, and this is...
what was happening? So I see a picture of just this white...
Well, there's this horns, and I was standing there doing the practice, and when I was with these high lamas, the gold dragon body started to activate.
It just looks like a smoky white light.
Yeah.
What were you at? You were doing
I was doing the gold dragon practicing, the Kunlun.
And you do the Kunlun that you're teaching.
Yeah, that's what it's being purpose is to make the body of light while still alive.
Right. And so that's the purpose of Kunlun.
Yeah. And I have one student who teleports and they caught him on picture. I got a picture I can show you later. It shows him like in Hiroshima. I said, you know, Mr. K, I call him Mr. K for now.
Yeah.
You got to go to Hiroshima because of what happened there. And so at sunrise, he was doing his practice and the lady, he was at an onsen mm-hmm. and he came in and the lady saw him starting to convert over. And he said,
starting to dissolve.
Yeah. And so she, like the black karmapa, or they'll take pictures uh-huh. and you start to dissolve. So she decided to pick up a cell phone and said, go ahead and take the pictures. And there's photo by photo, every 3 seconds, you see a picture. And there's this big, looks like a big light outside.
Uh-huh.
The onsen opens up like a big eye and he disappears. And then he comes back. Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. K, he's kind of like 300 pounds? Uh-huh. And he comes back and he's sitting, you get a wooden chair with the arms.
Yeah.
He's on one, his whole body is on one of these arms and the chair doesn't flip over. So it shows a skill of lightness. But you can do that too, though. Each person, based on what they've done in their past, uh-huh. their body, the magnetics of the land, the season, and the age will dictate, what will happen to you, what your specialty is.
Right.
Nobody's the same.
I felt something, though. Sorry, what were you going to say? I felt something of my body disappearing when I was around the Toltecs, the mm-hmm. Castaneda lineage. Mm-hmm. They were talking about the Death Defier. Mm-hmm. And I would talk to Carol Tiggs. You know her from the Castaneda tradition? Mm-hmm. She talked about disappearing for 10 years.
Right, right. Because Kunlun, the practices, I'm going to talk about basically, is that you got to get rid of your linear mind and go into a spatial mind. Mm-hmm. And so in Kunlun, you have what's called the little death.
Uh-huh.
And a time will come where your heartbeat and your breathing, the outer, would disappear.
Well, stop there. So you talk about the little, how do you make that trend?
Happens itself naturally through Kunlun. If I have a class of 90 people, say in China, in Japan,
yeah.
or that, I'd say 98% of them will have some kind of a form of awakening right away.
Doing the Kunlun.
If they do it right, yeah. It's the scholarly and the scientist people who kind of like, there's so much in their head, they don't know how to be playful. Mm-hmm. All the old masters are playful.
Yeah.
And so eventually you do Kunlun, and when everything opens up, your back will arc orgasmically. It's very blissful. And
you mean, it's not sexual anymore, but it's like...
It's extreme bliss.
Yeah, but it comes through all your whole field.
Yeah, but it can come in, it can come from the top down, bottom up, heart out.
From the Kunlun.
Yeah, outside uh-huh. in. Because in the spatial world, there's no inner, up, or out, or it's just awareness, you know? And what happens that your mouth will open up like a person who dies.
Yeah.
Your eyes will look up. Your crown will crack open like when you're born. And when you die, your crown must crack open. And the palate will crack open. The amrit will drip down, as you call, or the dragon's elixir. And their heart breathing will be so subtle that you start skin breathing. Mm. And the skin is the second lung.
Right.
And you start doing this. It's like jumping out of an airplane, the pressure, the pranic pressure. And you'll be like that. In a moment here could be years on the other side or vice versa.
This happens from doing Kunlun.
Yeah.
But you have to, it doesn't happen the first time you do
no,
it.
No. It's up when the person is ready. They must purify themselves. It's not so much physical in the beginning. Kunlun is, you got to purify the mind baggage because the body is a reflection of the mind, what holds positive or negative.
Right.
But it's like you come in, you're like a wet dog. You come in and you kind of shake it off. You know, and then, you know, like you look at people coming, they first come, they're all got the makeup more than Undertaker would put on, and they're not their true self. But when they do Kunlun, they kind of wipe out the memories of what made them change in a negative way. And so they go back to their natural self.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'll find the world is not, you don't see the world the same way.
So our natural self is really the light body in a sense. I mean, our destiny.
Yeah. Well, it's honestly destiny. We're stellar matter. I mean, mm-hmm. Everything is pure energy. You know, there's no really such thing as matter. It's 90%, empty space.
Yeah, but the amazing thing is you've traveled around the world, talked to these traditions, and they all have a tradition or a secret practice mm-hmm. of building this body. So in a sense, I mean, destiny in a sense, it's who we can become. Mm-hmm. All human beings have the possibility.
Yeah. As long as you're a human being. Like example, I won't say so much, but in Karma Kagyu, their highest practice looks like our Kunlun posturing. Uh-huh. And they'll ask these Karma Kagyu masters, who tame the rainbow body, you say, once you finish the earth here, you finish the lessons here, you pick one of 13 star constellations to go and teach. Because this is where the teachers are born to go and teach other
classes. You're doing that, I heard. You're teaching in star constellations.
Well, no. A lot of people say a lot of different things,
Okay, never mind. Crazy. You don't have to go there.
Well, a lot of crazy stuff you might hear from people, there's a lot of, people got a lot of positive things and some have negative because...
No, I haven't heard anything negative.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who don't like what I teach because it teaches you... Like some of the masters that I know don't want you to know it because they don't want you to be more powerful than they are. Dogma thing.
But it's not about power over anybody.
No, but in the West, it's like I'm master of this and that. I'm 23rd level master of this. But I always say master of what?
Well, just yourself.
Right,
what I'm getting is like you're teaching people how to be a human being,
what made me think is when I was with my Die, my Navajo teacher one day in November in Taos, we were sitting at a bonfire, just me and him one night. It was in November when I was going through initiation. And he goes, one day, they used to call me Red Willow Standings.
This is your Navajo name?
Yeah, the Standings is the name. Red Willow is a sacred plant that gives life. Again, it's like life and wind. And he goes, I go, D.A., what is your desire in this life? He goes, one day I hope to become a human being. And people understand what a human being is.
What is
you know, it? Human being means godlike in physical form, to realize that there's no separation, that you are it. We say in our Taoist way, there's only one of us. You know, but we fragment ourselves to learn things within us that we don't want to look at. So things are reflections. And it's not the things you've seen that are important, because you've learned those things. It's the unseen. So we say the secrets between the breathing in and the breathing out, between the heartbeat, between the space and the words. That's where it is. In order to go back, in order to go forward, you go back. In order to become full, you must become empty. That's the do without doing in the Taoist tradition.
Right. Wu wei wu.
Wu wei, yeah. And it's just, you know, the do without doing. But to do without doing, you have to open up everything first. You got to get rid of the baggage.
Right. All the personality, John.
Well, it's not so much the, you need to see, a lot of the fire path practices, they say, ignore the body, like in India. It's a piece of wood. It's trash. It's, you know, get rid of the emotions. You know, the five colors blind the eyes. And you know,
I don't believe that.
Yeah, but then you lose your personality. You become inert.
And you lose the reason you incarnated in the first place.
Yeah. And so in the water path, in our traditions, a lot of Taoists don't agree with me because I'm white. So Taoists who are not, you know, if you're Haole, we say in Hawaiian, or Guailo, means without life. Haole means without life.
Oh, really?
Guailo means walking ghost.
Oh. You know?
And so that's not a compliment for a white person. When you go to Hawaii, you're Kama'aina Haole. That means you're a ghost who walks on the islands.
You know? Wow.
And so, you know, if you...
Except the Hawaiians don't realize they have visitors there too, you know.
Well, there's all kinds. I mean
they didn't... They came from Polynesia. I mean, everyone came from someplace.
The root. See, example in Kahuna, they say that all the Samoans, the Tongans, the Tahitians, they all came from the eight arms of the octopus. And the head of the octopus is Rapa Nui, Easter Island. That's their root. And so that's why I say that's the head of the octopus, and all the arms represent the different Polynesian
islands. Did those guys disappear into their light bodies, the Easter Island people?
No, they're still around. Not everybody.
Oh.
You know, a lot of people don't have that desire. A lot of people just want to be happy. They just want to be able to just breathe and that.
But if they don't have that desire, I think they don't understand the reason for their incarnation, because I think you only can build the light body after you've completed, you know, the emotional, mental experiences here.
But you still have to learn it. Even though you get Go Dragon body, while you're still in a human body, you still have to face its limitations.
Which is what?
You have to follow the laws of nature that govern a human body, what you can and cannot do.
I mean, as far as eating and sleeping?
Stuff like that. You know, I mean, at times you eat less, sometimes you eat a lot. You know, it depends upon how much energy you're running. It depends on if you're transmitting it. We call mind to mind.
But there are masters who don't eat or don't sleep, who, like Yan Qin, he jumps over a building called, you know, high walking.
They call that grass gliding.
Yeah.
Or ghost walking, yeah. So, but, you know, a lot of those masters, though, you know, may not teach, you know, large amounts of people,
right?
You know, because it wasn't meant for the masses,
right? But you know, one of the reasons I'm doing this conference is because I want to bring people like you and the teachings up, because I think we're in a different, level of vibration, the earth, and more people are open to. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's true?
Each generation opens up quicker than the ones prior to it. Like when I was born in the '60s, it took a certain amount of time. Now you get the next generation, it may take, you know, less time, then the next generation, even lesser time, because, you know, everything changes, you know, so human beings are more open.
But do you notice that, like a vibration actually, or not?
Really? Yeah, well, it depends upon the area. Give an example. It was a funny thing. Was it the Navajo that was here, or some medicine people were driving by? They have a medicine circle that you drove past.
Yeah.
And they stopped by and they looked and they said, well, this place has more energy than the Sedona has.
Mm-hmm.
We call Sky Ladder. Mongolian shaman, the blue wolves, the kahuna, Taoists, they'll pick called dragon lines.
Mm-hmm.
And dragon lines were the north and south, east and west.
Mm-hmm.
And they call nodal points. And that's where they built the temples on.
Right.
And that's where they can tap into the energies that govern
the caloric energies, as some people call the energy. Yeah.
Yeah, and then those are connected with star constellations and that. But that's also the fire pathway. And the water pathway, you don't need to have any of those really outside you, because you can generate it inside.
Oh.
So, you know, you can make any place that will build that potential.
But what do you want for yourself as a human being, let's say.
I mean,
you're a teacher.
Well, I don't consider myself a teacher, more like a...
Like someone passing...
Yeah, just passing the knowledge, you know.
But do you want something for... I mean, you're still informed, you're still on the earth plane,
I just like being happy, like Deanna here, you know, I'm very happy, you know, a simple life. I drink tea, I have my tea all the time, I used to have a tea house, and that's my favorite.
But you must be, I mean, if you want to share, I mean, getting like downloads from others, I mean, you must be tapping into something.
Well, you can access it, after a while, you can access it at will.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's everything, it's called mind to mind, you know, with living things and, you know.
What are you accessing? I'm just...
Well, it's not Akashic records as you might be
No,
thinking.
I wouldn't call it
you
that.
You know, Every innate object has a life force to it. It has a memory. Right. It, you know, everything's pure energy. But if you get, but you got to look beyond the physical part of it. You got to see what's projecting the image. Uh-huh. You know, so you might see this bottle, but then what's projecting the image?
So do you look at things like that with, like you said, for 30 years after you start by lighting, you have this kind of...
For 30 years, I look like... have you ever seen a ayahuasca painting?
I have
seen
those.
Like a Hicholi.
Yes.
That's how it was for 30 years, but everything is a little dot.
Are you not seeing that now, or you've integrated that somehow?
I've integrated because I had... What happened? I don't remember. I think I had... I gave too much.
Oh.
And one day I was at a seminar, and my crown... This opens up. My crown's pretty much open.
Yeah.
And what happens is I gave too much, and it closed.
Oh.
And then the energy cut me off, you know, because it built like a nuclear overload.
Oh.
So I'm like a cooling nuclear reactor.
Oh.
And so what happened is that I know, well, this is it, you know. And so I had almost passed out after class. And this is one of the things when I overdid it. I gave too much.
You fed them too much of your own energy,
yeah,
your class.
And, yeah, yeah. And so I was laying in the bed, and I know I was going to go. I was going to die. And there was a Tibetan Lama. She's a doctor for yogis, you know, who have rainbow body. And so she says, you know, you have the capability of turning back, you know, but somebody has to ask you honestly to
come back.
And so she, being a Tibetan Lama from the Nyingmaj, you know, at the time she was a Lama, but she did a special acupuncture that was for yogis to bring them back, to open up all the gates again.
Wow.
And so then, you know, they came
back.
But
you came back because I there's something important.
Yeah,
here.
But I mean, no matter, you know, if you look at my life, I always look and you know, I just never believe in anything. And I was very scholarly and analyzed everything. And then I had too many death experiences, like after hit by lightning. Then I got impaled when I was in the military through the chest and out the back.
You got impaled?
Impaled.
With what?
A rebar. I was, you know, it was an accident. I've been hit by a car 3 times.
And all those, it was near death. Did you go?
One I had is my heart stopped in Hong Kong when I was playing with a snake.
Wow.
For a better word. You know, I have a thing with snakes. You know, I was
right,
there.
That's your logo.
Yeah. And so what happened is that I had drinking some venom. You know, the herbalist was illegal, and he had this industrial alcohol. I had poison glands and stuff in it. You know, and he gave me as a soup. He gave me the wrong batch, and I was playing with a 5-step viper, and it bit me. And I drank the stuff, and I was feeling pretty good. And they found me in the bathroom, black and blue.
Wow!
And I had my energetic body shut down, you know, closed the whole body off. And so my heart stopped for 3 hours. I couldn't start it.
Wow.
Then I came out of it, and I laughed and I smiled at everybody, and I went out and then for another 3 hours I tried to start my heart. Then I was pronounced clinically dead.
Wow.
And then I was put into the cooler. The cooler is what generates you.
Wow.
The coldness is what's good at Kunlun. And I came out of it, and 2 days later, I was fine.
Wow.
But when they took the scans, he found that the blood vessels were, you know, the blood cells were disrupting in the brain. He thought it would be a vegetable.
Mm.
And the Kunlun is like a deposit in a bank. You know,
you really had all that energy, all that chi built up.
Well, it's not chi. It's a type of, it's beyond that.
It's what do you call it?
In sciences, we say mind is gravity, is that you're tapping into a vacuum. In your Dantians, or you want to call it chakra-based systems, all that power comes from a vacuum. But how do you get the power out of a vacuum? Well, in our saying, we say mind is gravity.
Uh-huh.
When you create something with your mind, you hold it, see? But if you let the mind go, when you're doing the practice, your mind goes nowhere, it opens up.
Mm.
In the school of Tet, the school of Anubis, they call that the walk of the pharaohs.
Mm. So in all those near-death experiences, did you go to the place that people go? What happened?
I had one experience which I was spiritually immature, okay? And I had a death experience. This is a good one. you know, if I didn't mess up there, I would be a lot in a different place, I think. And I was walking, and, you know, I was working with Tibetan lamas before.
Right.
And they had saw me standing with a Buddha, and there was a Guanyin next to me. Mm-hmm. And I was working on this lady who was a hunter, and she would kill things. And
you were just doing energy.
Yeah. And I got so deep into it, the lamas had to come and disconnect me.
Because
the monks saw me over here, standing in the corner, far away with a Guanyin and the Buddha. And so anyway, you know, at that time, I was really not believing in stuff. And I was very kind of scientific, and I had this death experience, and I was in this gigantic cavern, and it was this thousands and thousands of beings from this world who were awakened, who had the gold dragon body, all the famous ones, and tons of unfamous ones from other worlds.
They all had their double
devils. To me, they were like a light blue, almost transparency, and then this glowing spot in the center of the chest, the wish-fulfilling gem, that radiant Benben stone, they call. And so I'm walking, and again, here's the Buddha, and here's Guanyin. They say, you know, they call it Seipo in the southern China. I have another Buddhist name is Guanyin, the male version of Guanyin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's another name.
And he comes to you. Well, anyway.
Well, I was seen as that also. By a lady called Qinghai Wu Shangxi. She was a famous lady.
So what happened in this experience?
And so anyway, I'm walking, and they walk me, and it's feeling like forever. And then I reach these steps and look like these Roman pillars, and there's this blinding light just sitting there. And my friend, Mr. K, actually has a picture of such a thing.
This is where you went.
Yeah, and this is where I went. And so I'm sitting here, and my right scientific mind says, nah, I'm hallucinating.
Right.
And so I crossed my eyes. They all looked at me, and like, this was a graduation time. And I stepped up, and I crossed my arms, and how do I know you're actually real? You're not a figment of lack of oxygen in my brain.
You said that in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and all of a sudden I saw everybody kind of the lights dimmed a little bit and kind of like they turn a little bit away like, uh-oh, you know. And all I remember was this big flash and I flew back extremely fast. Like you feel the wind. Like if you hold on in your dream.
You flew back into your body.
Yeah, but you know like when you hold a rope in your dreams and you're spinning fast and you're trying to hold on but the force, centrifugal force, and you let go and you feel that wind blast your back. That's how it felt. Uh-huh. And then I came back into the body, man.
What did that teach you? What did
it means I wasn't ready yet to accept that.
To leave or accept
that? Well, to accept that level of I don't say perfection, but of responsibility.
And if you would have accepted, what would have happened then?
Well, I was mentally not ready. I was too young to have that kind of spiritual awakening.
But if you would have accepted, you would have come back at a higher level, you feel.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, anybody who's died, some people come back with abilities, some don't. Uh-huh. Some come back with no fear. Others, you know, like they say, well, you know, I have so many people come to see me about these things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so see the city?
What is that?
Mr. K took that picture in a dark room. And that's the city. That's the sixth world. Look, there's a Sphinx. There's the buildings, the trees. And that's the door. That's the light that you see. That's the same light that I saw when I was in the cave.
Well, Anita Murjani came back as pure love. She was, you know, dying for 5 years. Right. She went to the other side, and she just felt this amazing.
It's beyond description. You could say, you know, human beings can call that love, but it's like the root that holds all things together. It's the source of all things. But to put it into human words, as close as you can get.
Right. But you also came back with power, in a sense, to initiate others who don't have to have that experience.
But they still have to do the work. They have to look at their stuff.
Right.
You know, they expect like the Shakyamuni, like, yo, great guru, give me this touch and bang, make it go away. That's like the pearl to swine concept. Yeah, you gave him a moment, but then he didn't have the practice to maintain it, so it dies off.
So the practice is the Kunlun for you.
Well, you're the self-awakener. There should be no middleman between you and the source.
Right.
You know, you don't need guides and stuff like that because in all actuality, you are more... They look at you as more evolved than they are because
they look at us as more evolved than them.
Yeah, because we have a physical body and can do it.
And because we have the vehicle for faster evolution. If you don't have the physical body, you don't have the evolution.
Well, and every life form eventually, haven't been in a physical body yet. But it's like a waiting line because in the physical reality, it's very rare. You know, if you take your computer screen and you have like one small square in the corner, that's the physical reality. And then you have the dark light, we call it the world of the dark light. Right. It's a short band frequency. You can't see it. That's why when I talked 20 years ago about dark light and dark matter, my friend said, no, this stuff don't exist. Now we talk about it. But then there's the source at the far end.
Yeah.
And in the Egyptian, they call this the tall, the ancient one. Mm-hmm. And we are the patal. We are the the sons and daughter of Ptah. Ptah means the children.
Ptah. Would that be Ptah?
But in the school of Anubis, or Apu, or Apuat, it's the Ptah, we're the Ptah.
Wait, going back to your history, so just because you brought the – so you went from the Chinese and you went to Hawaii, and then what was the rest of the
– Navajo, Apache.
When you were younger, Navajo, Apache. Did you know Harley Swift there?
No. Okay. I stayed very quiet. My DA said, you know, we don't speak – to anybody about
how
this
did thing. You find these they found you?
They came to me like this when I learned from about the school of Tet, the school of Anubis. They came to me and my friend in a tea house in California when he's closing his tea.
Oh wait, you weren't even looking for the Egyptian stuff. No. So how, I guess they knew you by your light.
There's signs like the school of Anubis has long fingers, but then there's marks on your vital organs they look at, star constellations.
Really? Wait, they didn't tell you to look at your vital organs.
They give an idea. When I went with my friends to this Egyptian, we went to the Louvres and stuff like that.
The Louvre in Paris?
Yeah. You know, and I go to places in Egypt when I was with William Henry.
Right.
And the way I read the glyphs are different than the glyphs that are read by the Egyptologists.
Right. Because they don't know what they're talking about.
So in Cairo, when those masters from Cairo came to me, he goes, well, how do you know? You know, they gave me the scripts. Like, can you read this? And I could read the glyphs.
Just telepathically.
I just knew.
And
it says, I take my students, that you read this and you understand it. Because, you know, where's the best place to hide something? It's right in front of you.
Right.
So, and then if you know how to read it, there's secrets.
Yeah.
Example, me and Deanna here, we were with William Henry.
Right.
You know, and we went to Egypt.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking it glyphs in a different way. And I said, William, have you read this one? You know, and so a different way. So we, you know, we laugh a lot. But there was this place that had you call it a stargate. Yeah, it's like a door.
Stargate.
Yeah. And so it had on the, and we got a picture of this. It shows like where it goes, the stars and constellations and everything, and how to activate it.
Right.
You know, but people can't read it these days.
Well, they didn't even know it was a stargate.
Yeah. What do you think of like on TV, something like that? And so Deanna, I said, okay, it goes, you know, I want you to touch the wall first and you can actually, the stones, why they're made of granite is they hold the memory. And you can activate it.
This is in the king, not the king's, but
no, that's actually wrong. That the position, when I told William when he went there, the position of that burial box was in the wrong position.
It was?
Yeah, it said, no, it belongs here.
They moved it.
Yeah, because people are getting too affected by it.
So it was moved. I felt there was something missing I lay down in there because I was like, I felt really, you know, intense energy, but then I couldn't access
that's
anything.
That's why people wonder, like, why is Max laying on the floor here? Because I was in the apex. I said, you're going to get anything over
moved.
Here.
It was moved intentionally. In the King's Chamber, there's a carpet. That is really interesting.
And then also...
and of course, the top was taken off, too.
Yeah. And so, this funny stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, all right, I say, Deanna, go in this machine, you know, go into this door, and, you know, the star is right. But, you know, and so I didn't know that we had a crowd... Because my mind, when I'm doing something, I ignore everything around me.
You go into a state.
And I think, Deanna, was it you got stuck on one side, a magnetic force would flow her, and she gets trapped. You can't pull away from the wall.
You can't. That happened to you?
Yeah, it's like one of those rides where you spin really fast and the bottom drops out.
So you were in the Stargate.
And then he activated the other side, and she gets shifted around.
What temple was
it? Abydos?
Is it Abydos? Abydos
sure.
is powerful.
It was a little temple on the outside.
It was on an island.
Oh, Philae. Was it Isis?
I'm not really sure. Then.
Anyway, I'll ask William.
Yeah, anyway, so then she starts spinning. You know?
In your mind?
No.
Oh, you actually started spinning. And then,
you know, and that's why then I stopped it right there.
Oh.
And I said, because you'll start going up.
And just like you start,
my whole body goes stiff, like it's.
You started to go up, like ascend to the, and you weren't ready for that.
Yeah. And so I didn't know behind when I shut her off, I grabbed her and then closed it. Behind me was some Egyptians and their model of this black and white skin, you know, with blue eyes, and they're the Magi. They're the keepers of the school of Anubis.
The Magi.
Yeah, they're the keepers of the knowledge.
They're still there.
Yeah. And so we're looking. And I kind of looked at them. They looked at me, and they went like, "How do you know how this stuff works? How do you know how to do it?" Uh-huh. And they followed us all the way around back to the boats and even across the river. They kept their eye on me.
Wait, but go back to how did you find the – I mean, you were sitting in a tea house with
my
friend.
My friend in California had a tea house.
Uh-huh.
And he was closing –
San Francisco?
Yeah, and he was closing his tea house. And we decided to go on a tea drinking binge for 14 hours straight without eating.
A puer?
Oh, no. Strong, like $3,000 for a pound tea.
Wow.
You know, and so we're clearing out this whole thing. And we're so caffeinated. And I couldn't even – we couldn't even crawl. It was so funny. And I was on a cover of Last Tea magazine as, you know, I said, Nego Master beaten by Kung Fu Tea.
You were on the actual cover?
Yeah, it was funny. And so there was a knock at the door, and he used to be a lawyer before he opened a tea house, and there was these two Egyptian fellows standing there, and they put their hands up.
Uh-huh.
And I already said, Apu, in my mind, School of Anubis.
How did you know that? Did you study that before?
No.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, it just, like, we sat down, and we said, just, you know, have some tea. We just invite anybody in. We're so happy anyway from all the caffeine.
Right.
And so we put it down and he said, can you read this? And I read it back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And it's like.
How'd they just knew to find you? They just were on and they, so.
Yeah, I get a lot of masters from Japan who just, sometimes they'll just show up at my door. So, even Shaman, we had this place in Sedona. And I think it was a guy from South America. He was a Shaman. He said, your house has a skylight, there's big energy coming out of it. I got to stop and see who you are.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's from Peru.
He's driving by here, stopped in. Yeah, I mean, it does stand out against the landscape. But going back to the Egyptians, guys, so you read it for them, and then did they start to reveal the secrets?
They did a practice. They transmitted me what was called the Sa breath. Now, it's not like, you know, the Sa breath is in the is in the coffin text. It's in the pyramid text, in the Osiris text. But a lot of people can't read. You know, you read like, oh, the emperor, or was not the emperor, the pharaoh, did this battle. And
right.
But each symbol actually in the school of Anubis has another meaning. So, uh-huh. Example, you come in as a mummy, a dry person, don't know anything.
Uh-huh.
And then you become a scribe. You learn to sit. You start to do the Saha breath. And you start to understand about the glyphs. Then you become, you know, eventually you want to become Ra Osiris, you know, uh-huh. the awakened man of light.
Right.
And that's when you got to do another type of sub breath.
Uh-huh. I think Om Seti knew this. Did you know the tales of Om uh-huh. Seti? You know who she was? The old woman who had the past life flashback of being the mm-hmm. lover of Seti mm-hmm. the First, and she was revealed all these secrets. Mm-hmm. And she,
you see, give an example.
Yeah.
Anubis, he was the jackal god. He was the lowest of the gods, but he's like the bastard son
right.
of Ra. But in actuality, he sat in this golden cast, you know, and inside. What was inside? He held a great secret. It was Kebahat, his daughter, who's representative of a black cobra.
Uh-huh.
And the gods would go on their sunboats across the sky. And, you know, Osiris, not Osiris too, you know, when to fear for Osiris, you had to be bought in by Anubis and you had to be in by Kebahat. They walk hand in hand. There are statues uh-huh. of this. And then your heart was weighed as a feather. You had to be light, made of light.
In order to get into the next.
Enlightened in the old ways means not how Buddhist enlightenment or scholarly you were is to emanate the light from out inside out.
Oh. So they introduced you to this practice and then did you just uncover it?
I just started developing it. And then, uh-huh. you know, I started reading the text, different text.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, boom, boom, boom. And then we went to Egypt with William Henry. And, you know, if you know where to look for the pointers.
Mm.
You know, like there's, you know, like they read up and down in Egyptology, but in the school of Anubis, they read like one line going across and down, and then they go toward this last symbol.
Uh-huh.
And the last symbol dictates what all this means. Like if you look for the symbol, this is what this actually means. It's not written this way.
Oh.
But the Egyptologists would never tell you this because the Sa breath, nobody wants to talk about. In the school of Anubis, there are five plates throughout Egypt. And you had to visit these plates.
Mm.
You had
That's
to read
a pilgrimage.
This. Yeah, it's like 5,000 words on this big basalt thing.
Uh-huh.
Sa, 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 sa. It only says one thing.
Sa, sa,
yeah.
sa.
If you have a, you know, you have a wave, looks mm-hmm. like a zigzag line, mm-hmm. that means water. Two means lake. Three means ocean. And then you have the rising sun, like a rising sun, it
right.
looks like, bowl upside down. And you have a snake on top.
Uh-huh. Was part of the Sa breath also building the rainbow or whatever body?
The body of Ra.
The body of Ra, which is the body of Ra.
Or actually, you can say body of Osiris. You know, because in embodiment, you are Ra Osiris, the awakened man or woman, the body of light. But to do that, you had to do the walk of the pharaohs. Uh-huh. And when you do the walk of the pharaohs, there was an internal cultivation of alchemy. Then there was an external where you took powdered rare earths, iridium, erodium,
uh-huh.
for 90 days till you oozed it. And then there was this walk you had to do, and then it's, you know, through sunset.
Right.
And you had to walk through all the gods, this corridor, and they had all the different gods, and you had to recite the sacred text.
Oh, right.
And the hand techniques and the breathing of each god and bring them into you.
And there's some translation of that, even though I walk with my immortal body. Yeah, I've seen that.
The bone, the indestructible bones of gold and bronze.
Yeah.
And then eventually at sunrise, he got to the steps. Mm. You know, this is steps to the Temple of Osiris, we say. And Osiris is actually the initiation temple. And so what happens is that there was a big parabolic mirror, and the Mayans have the same thing, the same practice.
Oh,
a different
so
variation.
The black obsidian mirror, the obsidian mirror practice, look at,
But it's a big one. It's about 5-6 feet across, and but it's made of gold.
Oh.
And the old masters, you know, what they do is that the sun rays in Egypt would shine upon that, the ray, the light, the hands of ray. And you see, like, the royalty were touched by these rays that look like a hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Akhenaten.
Yeah, and then the rays would touch the body and change the you into the body of Ra Osiris, you see? But then to maintain it, you had to engulf the tear of Ra.
Which is what?
That was the stone again.
Oh, the...
Yeah.
So you're finding a common thread through the Taoists, through Egyptians, mm-hmm. for the Kahunas, through the Tibetans.
Uh-huh. And one of the tests, that, like the Mayans, and the Egyptians used to do this, you know, they have the Ankh, which has 7 different metals. Uh-huh. You know, there was bell ringers in Tibet that would make the bell that would attune to your body, would give you the lifting.
Uh-huh.
And the Mayans would have, or the Aztecs too, have these big 12-inch gold plates on the side that they hit with their hands. That makes them lift, mm-hmm. a sign of enlightenment, awakening.
Mm-hmm. So many traditions, I mean, all the traditions had the secret teachings of attaining the rainbow body. And so many people throughout history have done this.
Countless. You know, if you go to Kham in Tibet, it's like the central meeting place of all Tibetan yogis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you're going to find all the remaining masters of the returnable rainbow body, you know, the non-returnable
in
rainbow
Tibet,
body.
In Tibet still, even though the Chinese?
Well, that's in Lhasa, that. See, it's controlled by the government. But they don't enter... You know, they won't enter that area.
The Chinese won't.
Yeah.
The Chinese will not enter that area.
And it's very, very secretive. It's very, very hidden.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
You have.
And I've been at the Dorji Dra Temple, where I met the living Buddha. And he had the water city, so he had a bumpa, little...
What was the living Buddha like?
He looked like a little rounded, porky pig kind of guy, you know, kind of... And he had the robe, very smiley. And he'd have a bumpa. It's like a little vase that they pour the water for ceremony.
Uh-huh.
At that time, I was with a scientist and a professor from University of Hawaii.
Mm.
I won't mention his name. We had a big thing after that. And I said, you know, I was having a tumor rise.
You were just naturally, a kundalini type thing.
Yeah. Very, very intense. And I taught my student how to help me counteract it.
Uh-huh.
But I wasn't strong enough. And I said to this professor, there's a tumor master here.
You knew it. Oh, because that's why you were feeling it, because you were resonating with it.
And he goes, no, I've been here countless times. There's nobody here.
Mm.
I said, go to the Dorji Dra Temple, the dragon temple.
Mm.
The indestructible means indestructible dragon. And so he goes there, and I saw this black door, and he says, I need to go through there. And I was with 8 of my students at the time. And so he wasn't allowed in.
Uh-huh.
He looked the scientist, you know, and this professor, and he goes to the Lama and goes, well, Max is just suffering from high altitude sickness. And I told him, the Lama, you know, tumo.
Right.
You know, and he looked at me and goes, he has tumo. You're wrong. Get out.
Uh-huh.
And he did a special ceremony because it was jumping to my students and they were starting to cook. And so he took the bumpa, and it's a very small vase.
Uh-huh.
And for over 4 hours, it would never empty. He could manifestate water. Sacred water, or darshan, they call it in Mongolia, out of this.
I just kept pouring it for 4 hours.
Forever, kept pouring, and just like this, kept pouring and pouring. It could manifest.
That's amazing.
And there was a light beam, and my students were looking like, we're totally started talking about gold dragon body.
Mm-hmm.
And rainbow body.
Telepathically you were talking to him?
Yeah, he could understand English.
Oh.
And my students didn't believe that these things exist, and he took off his shawl. Nyingma, we have this red and white shawl. And there was this beautiful sun. It was around sunset, you know, and we're getting ready to leave. And there was sunbeams coming through the window. And he took his shawl and he hung it on this beam.
A beam of light.
Yeah.
He just hung the shawl on the beam of light.
When he has the returnable rainbow body, everything he wears, remember, it's just formless. It's just the image of the mind. He's pure energy. And he actually hung it there. And he caught me by surprise also. And we're just looking for a moment. And he started cracking up and laughing. And that's how they are. And then we all went home.
But what's his state of consciousness? When you tap into that mind, what do you get?
How do I explain that? It's like everything is within the nothingness.
He's in that state.
Yeah. I mean, when they're, and within the nothingness, everything. That's the best I can explain. I mean, unless you directly experience it, they say if you can explain it, it's not the real thing.
Right. The Tao that can be said.
Yeah, but if you start laughing hysterically, that's the only way you can explain it. That's crazy wisdom, because there's no way to explain it in physical words that, you know.
Abahut, as they call it.
Yeah. That's why they say, well, he's crazy.
Yeah. You know?
But it's not, because it's a fine line between being a nutcase and crazy and being awakened.
Really awakened.
Like me, I never call myself awake, enlightened in any way or form. I think I just scratched the surface.
Well, you're probably more along the path than most people, or a lot of people.
Well,
but I mean, that's it's not an ego thing. It's just you're doing your thing, but and you're helping others.
And you know, so it's an amazing thing. Like, you know, sometimes it happens when I least expect it, like at sunrise and sunset.
What happens?
Like, you know, it activates. Like, I'll just move this. Like, see this picture here below?
Okay.
That's me, my hands. I was teaching a tea class on Hawaii in Oleo. It was a public TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And we were filming live TV, and my hands started changing over. That's my hands.
On camera, they started to come into light.
Yeah, and so I started emanating. That's the hands I was holding tea.
So you're saying the energy just kind of starts coming when it wants to. You don't plan it.
I can't control it in
any way. But all the kundalini and all the practices, you're building.
You're not really building energy. You're taking away what holds the energy in static in place.
Because
you're actually removing what's not needed so it flows more easily.
And that's all the personal junk we have, or all our personalities, the baggage.
You know, give an example of what I mean by baggage. When you're born, I mean, you're your perfect natural self. Your crown is open.
Yeah.
And the moment somebody says no, or you get spanked by a doctor, it closes.
Right.
Now, as time goes on, you go to school, somebody says, I don't like you. You're ugly. You're fat. You're whatever.
Yeah.
And so what do? Either you cave in, or you change yourself so that you get accepted by those people.
Right.
Now you're going to make this a habit over the years and your whole life. And after a while, you know, 20 years, 30 years go by, it's not you look in the mirror anymore. It's other people's desires, what you think you should have been.
Right.
So you cake up all this makeup and you try to look all, you know, peacocky, we call it.
Right.
And so, you know.
For your image.
Yeah, peacock. So you accept it. So then one day you come into kundalini class and you start shaving off that peacocky stuff.
Right.
And you may not like it, because you have to see the stuff.
Right, because we've identified that's who we are as ourselves.
Yeah, and you won't like what you see at times. And so you don't like it, so you end up blaming the teacher who taught you.
Right.
Because, you opened me, so you're responsible for my lessons, so take it away.
Well, relationships can do that too, though.
But the hardest lessons come from those closest to you.
Yeah.
You know, because they know you, how you are since you're young, so they know every niche about you, so they know how to get it to you.
Right.
And so, in like when I was with the Navajo and Apache, they call me Coyote also, because, you know, I'll say one thing one time, and the next thing I'll do something different.
Right.
Because that kind of throws you off.
Right.
One extreme, then another. It's like the coyote, you know, he'll bite you. You know, like when a coyote's walking around, his ears are up, but then when he comes to you, his ears are down.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you're not looking, he'll bite you, and then he'll turn around. Did you bite me? No. 1 year's up, 1 year's down. See, because coyote's nature is to make you see what you need to see. And sometimes it's going to mess up your mind a bit to make you see another reality. It's like saying, if I said, imagine that everything you ever were taught since you were young is a lie.
Right.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah. Now, imagine that the lie was a lie.
Okay.
Yeah, see, so you got to get a little more deeper than that.
No, I get.
Yeah. You know, because you have to, when people come into kundalini, it's I look at it like they're a chicken.
Uh-huh.
They come in, and what happens when you cut a chicken's head off? They flap, and they whack, and they crack, crack, quack, quack. All the blood comes down. It's like all your stuff you're throwing off. And eventually you become still,
mm-hmm.
and you awaken.
Right.
And kundalini, it's natural. You do kundalini right now. You don't realize it when you go to sleep.
Uh-huh. We do it.
Yeah, naturally. But you're unconscious to what you naturally already know.
But kundalini means fire and water?
No, kundalini means the top of the head, the path of no more learning, the house of the immortals. It also means the crystal palace in the center of the brain.
Uh-huh.
And the crystal palace in the center of the brain in the school of Egypt is also called the crystal corridor, which is in the unfinished chamber in the Great Pyramid. If you go
in the pit.
Yeah, me and Deanna went down there in the pit.
I know.
You know, but there's a little thing that, you know, you used to have bars on, but it was open for us. And we went down there. We call it the upside down world. And it's all crystal. That's the teaching.
Did you go in there?
Yeah,
really?
But it's the teaching hallway of Osiris, where the students would sit and listen. It's where they access the library. But I think they closed it off. I don't know who told me, I was William or not, that they closed it off one time because many people went down there and the air is thin.
Uh-huh.
And some people had died in there. That's why they barred it off.
Oh, I think when I was there, it was barred off.
Yeah.
It's so strange, the pit. It looks like this unfinished cave.
I mean, but you'll get that, but there's that little They call it the secret red square.
I think it was full of
it's
water.
There
was a little spot that had water?
No, it's a door maybe about 3 feet.
Oh, I think I did see that. It was
a metal
sealed
door.
Yeah. You know, J.J. Hertog, who's coming to this conference, spent a lot of time in Egypt, and they went below the
pyramid with the undercity, the
and they
city.
Found the tomb of Osiris. Mm-hmm. They actually found
under the pall.
Yeah. Well, no, not in the
pall. Or did he find the underground city underneath the Great Pyramid?
Yeah, underneath the Great Pyramid.
Maybe they needed a certain sound to get in.
They didn't do the certain sound, but they were with some of the old Egyptologists, mm-hmm. and they found this. So he'll tell you, but I think you'd be interested in what he found there, because it's another doorway to this secret knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So they cover that up because that was where the hall led into the Hall of Records.
Yeah, if you look at some of the old glyphs, like the coffin text and the glyphs, you can read it. And actually it shows them, the students sitting in there and then actually learning from Osiris himself.
Is Osiris still there? Some people say Osiris is still meditating.
No. Well, see, past, present, and future exist in the moment.
Right.
So if you're in a linear mind, you separate everything. But if you're in a spatial mind, like the shamanistic ways or those who've attained the body of light, past, present, future, there is no difference. It's only where your mind is. And your mind is everywhere at one moment, so where you choose.
But are you there? Can you do that? I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, not that you're to brag, but you live in that space or sometimes.
Well, let's just say sometimes the spirit world, it really wants you to listen.
No, but you're here now
But also, I see many realities at one time.
Yeah, can you describe? That's fascinating. I mean,
how would you want to? The basic level of my seeing, I'll see the light around every organ. Every cell has a light. Light around
in everyone's body.
Yeah, in many layers. And then they call climbing the spider web. There are lines of light that go everywhere and through everything, but they don't touch.
You see that now.
Yeah,
you can see that.
Time.
If you tune, okay.
Yeah, and then everything has a sound to it. Everything has a sound, a harmonic. And when they get close to each other, it's a different sound. When people walk toward each other, there's a different sound.
If you tune your mind to that, I mean, as you're saying it, I could almost imagine.
Yeah. But to get that to happen, you have to open up in Tibet. There's the energy channel called Katika, the channel of clarity between the mind, the upper head, and the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a picture of Guru Rinpoche, he taught the Tibetan practice. He's Indian. And he brought the Tibetan, the Buddhism to Tibet. And it shows him a picture, and it shows this rainbow color light.
Mm-hmm.
But you show it emanates from the head and the heart, not the lower area where you thought your kundalini would be.
Uh-huh.
Because after a while, when you gets past the body, your tailbone, the heart becomes the tailbone. Then the head becomes the heart.
Oh, so the kundalini that was at the base of the spine is now focused in the heart.
The tummo in that case. Yeah, it's like you're like taking the energetic body and you're shifting it up one level.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so that's going to pull up the physical body.
Uh-huh.
And it's like in certain hidden, called Sogo, certain rainbow body practices, they will see these spheres of light.
Mm-hmm.
First, they're clear and they swim around. And it's like the glue holds everything together. And then eventually you start seeing different color ones, and then bigger ones and smaller ones. Then you mentally place the big ones over the small ones.
Mm.
And this is how they build up their gold dragon body, or we call it the returnable rainbow body.
Wow.
That's one of the practices.
Wow.
There are many. There's the eight yogas of Naropa, they're called, Tummo and Poa, the opening of the crown.
Mm-hmm.
All practices, you have to open up the crown.
Do you teach all this?
I don't teach the Tibetan stuff. I learned... from my teacher, who was my grandfather from Seven Lives. He passed on, and he taught me the Dorje Purba, called Santik Purba.
Uh-huh.
It's the wrathful yidam, and that's what they use for tummo and for developing the rainbow body.
So do you feel like you've taken all many of these traditions and sort of integrated them into a single thing?
What I did is, when I got all the knowledge from my many, many teachers, I decided to go and retreat in the desert in Taos, New Mexico for 2 years in a tent with one of my friends. And I sat there for 2 years, and I had this rattlesnake as my kind of a pet.
A real rattlesnake?
Yeah, yeah. I had a green, one of those green, I guess you call them Mojave rattlesnakes, and this old little cat that I found. And they were my partners for my 2 years, and I went through everything I ever taught that I ever knew from all my masters and
teachers. From the Tibetans, from the
Native
Americans,
And I went through each one, and I looked at the system, what was useful, what was not.
Hi, I'm back here with Max Christensen. He said he would blow out the electronics. I guess the internet went down, so I'm back on cellular telephone. But, okay, so let's go back to that point where you took 2 years, and you distilled it all down to a practice called Kunlun.
Yes. Kunlun, again, in China, there's a Kunlun temple, there's a Kunlun martial art, Qigong, but it's not the same thing.
Because I want to honor all my teachers, mm-hmm. and I want to give credit to one teacher because there's a jealousy, you know how it could be.
Right.
And so I named it Kunlun. Because in actually in the Kunlun Temple, they don't have a form to learn to develop skills to awaken. It's been forgotten. So my student, Mr. K, you know, he's Japanese, he actually went to Kunlun Mountain mm-hmm. and actually taught the monks what they forgot.
He taught them your practice.
Yeah. Mm. He's attained the Go Dragon body.
Just by doing your practice.
And they actually made him the abbot of the temple. I just found that out.
Is he Chinese?
He's Japanese.
He's Japanese, so anyway, he was more accepted.
Yeah, he's big as a bear.
So. He's big.
Yeah.
So you just feel that, so all the other stuff, the alchemy stuff, the mercury, I mean, the water.
It's hidden in the Kunlun. When the person is ready, I give them more. You know, it's more of an individual thing. And so...
Well, I just want to say, you're teaching a Kunlun course coming up the weekend of the 19th. Right, in Arizona on April 19th and 20th. Mm-hmm. And April 27th. Mm-hmm. Can beginners come to that?
Yeah, it's a beginning level, so anybody can come and learn it. But I don't teach children because the children, unless they're, you know, they got to be 18 because they're still developing mentally and physically, and they mm-hmm. still have to get, you know, in the world. They have to, you know, make a job and a living. So if you open them up, and then all of a sudden you got to teach them, and then the school will tell you, well, this don't exist, but yet you're seeing these things.
Right.
You know, they're going to think like, something's a little bit off here.
Right.
Like my mom, she didn't believe in a single thing. And so my mom thinks...
Sounds like my mom.
Yeah, well, my mom thinks... she's from Germany, the old country. So
really?
She can understand.
Okay.
You know? And so I tried to explain what doesn't work.
No, some people... just don't have a belief system open to that.
Yeah.
So if people want to register, they'll just go to your website,
yeah.
primordialalchemist.com.
And it's very simple. It's not a complex system. You know, the highest practice are actually the most simple.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, the old masters never had complex systems of many levels. They had, if you did A, B, C, you got it. Because in the old days, we were connected with nature. It wasn't like today where it's confused. You have work and job and family. And so there's so much dogma, and everything's hidden.
Right.
And so it's a lot of people do scholarly stuff, but you don't see too many people. Like, one day I went to a satsang with Anzen Rinpoche.
Mm-hmm.
And I was dressed in my Indian or Tibetan robes. And I got to see the Mahasiddha. He's the reincarnate of Guru Rinpoche.
Mm-hmm.
And you take pictures of him, he'll become transparent during his classes. So I decided, you know, there's a pecking order. In front of him is his monks and his sister, and then the other teachers, and then the tourists.
Right.
The wannabes.
Yeah.
And I decided to sit myself right on the podium where he walks up and he sits on the high podium. And I decided to sit right there.
Why did you do that?
Well, I said, this is my opportunity.
Okay.
And I said, I knew, you know, nobody told me he was Guru Rinpoche, and I saw it. And so he's starting to do his talk, and nobody's getting it. And I started trying to do mind-to-mind.
Mm.
And the next thing, he stopped his talk. And he looked at me, and he pointed his finger and said, stop doing that. How did I teach? And he felt what I was doing.
Right.
And most people, no matter high lamas, they have to go practice like 10,000, 100,000 prostrations just to go see him.
Right.
So I got invited to his house to talk to him personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, this is cool. And I go, and I was teaching the students downstairs, the monks, mm-hmm. you know. And I go up there, and his translator didn't like me too much. She goes, you know, I had to wait for, you know, 6 or 7 years just to see him. And you just saw him, you know. And so, you know, because when I do...
Well, you've done a lot of work, though. You waited, you know, lifetimes.
When I did my prostration, I didn't do like a traditional Tibet.
Oh.
I had my own ways.
Uh-huh.
And so, anyway, we're talking. I said, go to Rinpoche. And he looked at me. And she said, translate what I'm saying. And he goes, you call me Guru Rinpoche. He goes, yeah, I know who you are.
Ah.
And so... And, you know, one thing led to another. He goes, well, I want to teach in the West the returnable rainbow body.
You said this to him.
No, he said that to
me. Oh, he said that to you.
He wanted, what, 8 or 10 people to teach it to in the West.
Uh-huh.
And I actually turned him down.
Why?
Because I felt I had enough.
Enough
knowledge.
But you're teaching that anyway,
aren't you? No, I only teach the Taoist part. And, you know, and I didn't want to really go deep in the Tibetan anymore, you know.
Because it would conflict with the Taoists, or?
See, a lot of the masters were ones who were to start off Tibetan actually learn Taoism. And Taoists actually learned Tibetan Buddhism later on.
Uh-huh. But the Tibetans seem more teach in a formalization and tradition. Yeah. The Taoists are more just, let's do the energy. Forget the, like, whole ritual and dogma.
Right. But there are a lot of Taoists who are ritualistic Taoists. There's religious Taoists.
Well, those aren't real Taoists. I mean, my definition is they're doing ritual. They're not practicing the real Tao.
Well, there's a different level, based on people. It's a person for every level.
But the Tao is the real essence of nature.
Yeah, it's the great mystery. It's the void. It's the void.
But there's no ritual that will get you there.
You must remove everything.
Yeah.
When you're born, you're born from the nothingness, and you came with everything. You're fully open, aware. That's why you ever look at a baby when it's a newborn, the baby don't look at you, it looks through you.
Right.
And its grip is very strong.
Right. But I think a lot of the ritualist Taoists are the Confucian influenced by the culture that had to create ritual.
Well, then they had cultural revolution and all kinds of stuff.
But the real Taoist, which you're connected to and teaching, is the essence of how to attain the perfection.
Yeah, but that's the oral tradition still. It's not written down.
Oh.
It's still an oral tradition. The Mao Shans, when the Shan Qing Taoists, we don't even talk about it.
Mm.
Now, if you go to Taiwan, they do a lot of bringing spirits into them, and like you in India, piercing their muscles,
right,
not bleeding, and cutting their tongue, and not with swords, and not getting cut. That's more like showy Taoist. Us, we don't bring spirits into us in that because no middlemen. You're the source. You got to open your own source. You don't have to have something in between.
Right. Where is Mr. K? Is he about around?
He spent a great deal of time. He's not teaching. He's always in he's practicing in his cavern.
What's the purpose of that secluded practice?
I tell him to go do it.
No, but why would someone?
Because you need to keep that contact with nature. When you get a dragon body, you need to do a practice to maintain the physical body. Or it'll deteriorate.
Will it just dissolve?
Basically,
yeah. Won't it turn to light?
You're not a solid. Like, we had a picture. What was it, his birthday? Made him a cake, or was it my birthday? One of our birthdays. And anyway, Khan walks in front of the camera when somebody's taking a picture, and you see the birthday cake through him in the camera. I got a lot of pictures I'll show you later, and it shows him dissolving. And a lot of people think, these are fake pictures, they're made by a computer. And so one scientist took his cell phone and, they can read when it was made and all the, those computer nuts, they can kind of read and see. And it was authentic.
No, I believe it. I mean, absolutely. But don't you want to end up there anyway? Why does he want to stay here when,
Because I asked Khan that when he does that, he takes care of the Asian section of the world, and then I'll do this part, or Dan will do this part. If something happened to me, she'll be the Western, because I don't want the art to be diffused in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I have a lot of students worldwide, but people aren't that serious.
Well,
it comes down. Some just again want health; they're happy with bliss. But bliss is addictive. It could be like a drug.
Mm-hmm. But your purpose is to achieve this body, this immortal. It's the immortal body.
Everybody's immortal. See, if you think about physical immortality, like some of my teachers, it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it.
Like Babaji, you're saying?
Yeah, well, think about it. If you've done everything, experienced everything, and seen everything, what is there else to do?
Well, what else is there to do?
Yeah, to be an
IV.
But I mean, if you're here in the physical world, to become a representation of what is possible.
Right.
But then, he always dies with his physical body.
But
because,
do you have to die? Can you just turn that body to light?
It depends on the practitioner.
But it's possible.
Yeah, it is. But, when Babaji, when he goes, he leaves the body.
Oh.
And all the masters, even though they're very evolved and got the gold dragon body or returnable rainbow body, they'll physically just leave their body here because it's part of their mind and allows them to return again.
But can you just, kind of lower the frequency of your body and return here like the hermetic?
Yeah, but your mind can't always focus on that constantly.
Oh.
So we have a practice, actually Tibetans call Om Ahom, but it's a practice to ground the energy and to densify the body. And you have to do that.
In order to be here.
Yeah.
But your mind is still, evolved into
oneness. You're not in the container anymore.
Right. Do you see the whole planet eventually achieving that?
No. Did we say in our tradition, my teachers, every 100 years, only 1% of the human populace evolves.
But it seems like something else is happening here.
You have the celestial involvement that can help too. But before, maybe four times. You know, it was like only 1% of the populace would ever evolve.
But more people are at least hearing this. I mean, they're hearing this now.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
but if they're willing to do the practice, a lot of people, they like it in the beginning, but then the knowledge wears off. I have to actually do something.
Yeah, it becomes work, right?
And
yeah.
You make it mundane, like, oh, another day of practice. Once you think it's another day of practice, because your mind dictates your reality.
Right.
The last thought of your day dictates what's going to happen tomorrow.
Oh.
So if, when you sleep, the last thought of your day dictates what's going to happen the next day.
Oh, I see. That's good to know.
If you practice falling asleep, even though you're dreaming like a dream yogi, you can still keep practicing that 8 hours you're sleeping or whatever.
Right.
In order, and so, you know, like a lot of sleep yogis, like the Tibetan ones I know and the Taoists, they'll sleep for 24 hours a day. They only go eat and sleep and go to the bathroom. That's it.
Because they're in this incredible state of consciousness.
No, well, how you do it actually is really interesting. Try to go to sleep one day as much as you can. Then stay awake as long as you lay in the bed. Don't move much.
Uh-huh.
And stay awake.
To stay awake without moving. But
no speaking.
Right.
Now, when you don't move externally or you don't talk, the energy builds up inside you.
I think I've done that. And you feel really rested at the end.
No, but you will rest after a while.
Oh, rested. Because you want to get up and do
something. Yeah, I think it's movement.
Okay, if you resist that.
And then it's like what happens when you shake a container like a cup of soda.
Right.
You build an internal pressure.
Right.
The universe inside gets stronger than the universe outside. You start to do this teaching presence. The energy starts to flow out.
So if you lay in bed and don't move and resist the restlessness and just stay there, and you start to build up the energy
then,
field.
Yeah, but then you start getting very lucid in this world. So there's a lucid dreaming while you're asleep and awake at the same time.
Uh-huh.
You're in the godhead state. And how they get their CDs and powers, in like in the Tibetan version, is they exchange the sleeping, the dream world, which is the true reality, for this world, which is actually the dream.
Right.
That's why they can bring all their powers and abilities from the dream world to this world. They just merely change. They shift their awareness from linear to spatial.
Uh-huh.
But they bring the spatial mind and keep it in the body instead of let it return to the other side.
Right. I do think the collective is heading to a more evolved state. I mean, this is my feeling. And I think, you know, what you're saying here is amazing. It's beautiful. It's what I think people who've been looking for religion, looking in certain dogmas, really want to find.
But you got to read between the words, you know? And a lot of things also is attachment.
Attachment to
the practices. Like, example, you learn a practice which is a form. What does the form teach you? It's a limitation of form. You have to let go of the form to understand what it truly means.
Oh.
What we call Kundalini is formless form.
Oh.
Because you're practicing a form, and then automatically it activates, and you go into formlessness, which is the true Tao.
Huh.
That's what we call opening or walking the path.
So with this conference that's coming up this weekend, I think focusing on this state of awareness, I mean, of course you can talk about those problems, but I'm interested in what you would say about maintaining this eternal presence of mind, seeing all those levels.
Well, as long as you can connect the central, this is what we call crystal palace, or they call it mud palace cavity.
Third eye.
In the center of the brain with the heart.
Right.
You know, that's why in Tibet, you know, they say when bliss and emptiness merge together, the drop went into the ocean of wisdom, you get your awakening. You know, that's the downward flow, the water path.
So it's a water tradition.
Just in a nutshell, you know, the old masters, they never did any practices of making a route or creating. They focused on a point, and the mind was very, very still to a point where the point opened itself. Then the pathway was revealed on its own, and then the color and the spin naturally came.
You know, I remember trying to fall asleep when I was really young, at 3 years old, and focusing on that point, and then just being taken by a beam of white light, and I didn't get to that.
If you focus on a point too hard, you won't get.
Oh.
It's like an acupuncture point. You put the needle on the point, it's one effect, but if you break through the point, it's another effect.
Oh.
So you have to penetrate the point.
Uh-huh.
You know? But you got to know there's different gates in the body for different purposes.
Oh, Yan Chen says, imagine without imagining. Yeah, right. So so there's certain gates in the body, you're saying?
Yeah, spirit gates.
Oh.
There's many gates for different purposes.
Based
on what you're trying to attain.
But Kun Lun will reveal that if you stick with it.
Yeah, to each individual, it's going to open based on what they desire, but also what the spirit will, you know, what they preordained for themselves before they came in the body.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the higher you go, the lessons are harder. It's like in the beginning, you know, like most people practice, like going to Mount Everest or Kunlun, it's very easy to get to the first base camp, but then the mountain gets a little bit more steeper, it gets a little bit more harder on the climb.
Does the practice change or just the... It's constantly changing.
Well, Tao is always changing. It's never static. So as long as you're doing Kunlun, you're going to statically... Now you're going to be static. You're going to change physically and mentally. Sometimes it's very easy. Sometimes Deanna can tell you some of her own stories. Mm-hmm. It's also very rough at times.
Is it Diana? She shakes her head.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing Kunlun?
6 years.
And what's been your experience?
It's like riding a roller coaster. You get your highs and your lows. You got to just go through your steps. And a lot of people, it's hard to go through your steps.
But where are you as a student and friends of Max's? But where are you now? I mean, are you at a place now from doing Kunlun that you are surprised at in your own awareness, consciousness?
There's always a bigger mountain.
Uh-huh. Is that true for you?
Well, we say that in our tradition. Yeah, like Dan was trying to say, like in our tradition, you say when you get to the top of the mountain, you look at the beautiful clouds, and then you say, oh, I made it to the top, and all of a sudden the clouds move, and there's even a bigger mountain.
Is that? Do you see that too?
There's no ending.
Well, there's no ending to the Tao.
No, I mean, you know, the physical body is kind of gives you a limitation how fast or how high you can evolve.
Mm.
Once you get past the physical body, like even every energetic world that exists, the 99 worlds that exist past here, each world, you know, it's a form of energy, has a form of physical density to it.
Right.
There is a form of physicality to it.
You need a vehicle, you're saying?
Well,
you need some kind of body, form of body to house consciousness.
Yeah. Then you still have your individuality then at the same time, mm-hmm. but you still have the group consciousness.
Right.
But not like an ant colony where you have no control. You have, you know.
This is what happened to J.J. Hertog when he went to these higher realms and saw a Metatron Knock and the Ein Sof, as he calls it.
But the higher you go, there's certain barriers that human beings can't pass unless you have a, you know, there's always a side door, but there's a path not, unless you have something from the other side who will take you without
the dash.
In a way, you got to be shielded, as best I can say.
Uh-huh.
Shielded by their field of influence so that you're not, you know, basically you don't dissipate.
Right.
The law of thermodynamics. If you have a energy in a container, it's higher energy, and then you get a bigger room and you release it, you know, it's going to reach an equilibrium.
Right.
So imagine that if you go into a higher realm, and all of a sudden there's got to be equalization. So there's nothing to contain you.
Uh-huh.
It's a dispersion.
So you have, I think you're saying to me between the lines that you have guides that actually help you as you travel to these other worlds.
Yeah, but I don't call them guides.
What would you call them?
They're parts of your own self that you don't know of yet.
Oh.
Your own higher projection.
And they're talking to us all the time. I mean, they're trying to guide us.
Yeah, but it's not talking. Some people see it in pictures. Some it's a spatial awareness. Some it's a flash. Like, and when you come in, you get these flashes of light in your left eye at times when they're visiting. A smell of lilac, rose, or lavender. We get a lot of pictures. I can show you when you're practicing different places. You know, my teacher will come and they'll have one picture. It looks like an orb. She comes really slow in and she'll come right from our bed and she'll make a big loop-de-loop.
You'll see this with your own eye. Beautiful.
So, you know, I used to practice a lot in cemeteries because my teacher says the great library. You know why? Because they live in the stones for a period of time.
The dead astral, whatever.
We don't call them stuff that, but
whatever.
They're in between.
Right.
They haven't made a decision.
They live in the stones.
And so, until the body deteriorates, that's part of the original mind. And so what happens, you actually will catch pictures of them. I'll show you a bunch after if you want.
Yeah.
Show you how interesting it is.
That's why some people freak out because they can't deal with the in cemeteries. I mean, it gets.
It's a library.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's like if you go to the pyramids or you go, you know, anywhere you go.
Right. There's that practice, that Tibetan practice that they do in
Chuk.
Yeah, right, right.
But they'll sit on a cemetery, then they'll sit on a body.
Right.
The Adnis of India.
All right.
You know, they'll eat the body, which
they
know,
will.
They'll sit and they'll drink out the Kapala, the skull.
Right. Saboto. Wrote the book about the Aghori.
And they try to get jolty, the body of light. You know, they try to change over in the same way.
Uh-huh.
But then they get a little bit too crazy.
Too much ego power.
Yeah, it was too extreme.
Yeah,
you can get awakening, but have no siddhis, no powers or abilities. Or you can have abilities, but have no awakening.
Right.
Because if you overuse the abilities, they'll close and disappear.
Right.
And so if you don't use them, you know, then you can use them for a higher purpose.
Wow.
Because remember, if you abuse something, there's a law of nature. There's got to be a balance somewhere.
Wow. Well, I think, well, I appreciate this time you spent. Thank you for going. I mean, I know there's so much more. But no, I hope I didn't talk you out too much.
Oh, no.
No, so you'll be sharing some of this weekend.
Yeah, I wrote a paper down.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to kind of...
I'll go over it with you after. We can just kind of go through that. Yeah. Well, no, thanks so much for, you know, it's amazing. I could listen to you for a long time. Yeah, and the primordialalchemist.com for Max Christensen's upcoming classes, April 27th in with Deanna Aubrey in Arizona, not far from Sedona. And you can go to the website and check it out. He'll also be speaking, and I invite everyone listening to this weekend in Sedona at Poco Diablo Resort at the Consciousness of Immortality Conference. And I think you're the perfect person to be there by what you're been sharing. So thank you for listening tonight. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. You can also find tickets for the conference at newrealities.com or futurescienceevents.org. Max will be speaking Saturday in the morning towards lunch around 11. So come for the whole day, come for the whole conference. I hope to see everyone there. You can email me back at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Good night.